speaking about yard sites, next Sunday, Zion Adar, is the 22nd yard site of the late of Chaim Yaakov Goldwich, Zichrono Livracha, Rosh Hashiva of Keren B'Yavne, who I was privileged to study 50 years ago. And I felt that it was appropriate to share with you some of his words. That'll be the first part of the Shia, which is entitled The Simcha of Adar. And then we'll continue with a few of our own cited remarks on the Simcha of Purim. Source number one teaches us, Kishem shemishenichnas av mematin b'simcha, kach mishenichnas adar marbin b'simcha. Many of us are familiar with mishenichnas adar marbin b'simcha. There's even a song, people sing more than one, which has those words. But they often fail to realize that it's a juxtaposition. It's a kishem. Just as we reduce joy when Av enters, so too do we increase joy when other enters. And this juxtaposition is very strange and hard to understand. Kishem usually means just as this, so is that. There are here, there are opposites. So what do you mean just as? How do you explain it? We are familiar that the month of Av is a tragic month because of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. If you look more carefully in the original source, the Mishnah Masechta Tanis, you find that there were five tragedies on Tisha B'Av, and the very first historical tragedy is the sin of the Meraglim. As source number two teaches, I'm sorry that some of these sources are a little bit not properly formatted, it says, Atem b'chisem b'chia shalchinam, the post of Ayifko ha'am b'layla ha'hu, it was Tisha B'Av, you cried for naught, v'ani koveh alechem b'chia l'doros, and I will establish for you a permanent crying on Tisha B'Av because of the subsequent tragedies of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, etc. This is the beginning. This is this Mishenichnas Av Memata B'Simcha, begins with the Chet of the Meraglim, the sin of the spies. And somehow or other, we're supposed to understand that just as that caused us to reduce joy, so too the month of Adar should cause us to increase joy. How do we explain it? So Rav Goldwich Zal understood as follows. What was the major change which took place when the people of Israel entered into the land of Israel? They changed their lifestyle from a miraculous spiritual life in which all their needs were provided, the man and the be'er, etc. They didn't have to fight. The cloud of glory flattened the mountains and flattened the enemies. And they're about to go into Eretz Yisrael, which is a completely different life. As the Torah tells us, Ki savo el ha'aretz unetatem, you will plant. No longer will the man fall down from heaven. Now you're required to plant for yourself. Now you're required to do something which others have failed to do, which is to combine a life of this earth, of this world, together with a spiritual one. This is a very, very difficult challenge. There are societies in which individuals are set aside for spiritual lives, but they then have to withdraw from the physical world. You know, in certain religions, the priests are supposed to remain celibate, etc. The Torah rejects this. We just read yesterday, Va'anshe Kodesh Tiyun Li, you shall be holy men unto me. The Kotzke Rebbe said famously, Va'anshe Kodesh, be men of holiness. Malochim Hobich Genug, I have enough angels. Angels are individuals who live in completely spiritual spheres. Hashem wants us to be people who are nevertheless holy. And source 3 begins, I'm not going to read the first half, which is Aramaic, from a Medrash Rabbah, but for those who want to follow in, it's talking about a bird who has ephrochim, little chicks, very small, and she gathers them in and hovers over them, and she forages to get them food, Once they get old enough that the mother bird recognizes that the baby birds are old enough to be a dependent, what does the mother bird do? As the baby bird comes closer, she takes her beak and bangs her in the head and says, go on your way. That's the Aramaic of the first half of this source number three. Since no one knows Aramaic that well, I'm not going to give it in the English, in Aramaic, but we'll read the second half, which is Hebrew, which most people do know. Kach. When the Jews were in the desert for 40 years, a supernatural existence while they were in the desert. Which means go and plant. There's a much greater challenge. It's easier to be an individual immersed in holiness when your entire life is spiritual. That's the incubating period. But that was not Hashem's plan. Hashem's plan was leave the desert, leave the completely spiritual atmosphere, and get involved in planting and even in fighting, leading a very worldly existence, and at the same time be spiritual people, be Anshei Kodesh. This indeed is the challenge of entering into Eretz Yisrael. Unfortunately, the spies failed the challenge, led to the Chet HaMeraglim, the original tragedy of Tisha B'Av, of the month of Av, which subsequently led to the Churban Beis HaMikdash. If you look carefully in source 4, Moshe calls Hoshea ben Nun Yehoshua. As the next line says, Koyo Shiacha Meyatas Meraglim. Moshe prayed that Yehoshua will be saved from the sin of the Meraglim. What was their sin? The Zohar says their sin was they knew if they'd go into Eretz Yisrael, they would lose their positions. It's a pretty flimsy defense. What it really means is they would lose their positions because they were leaders in a period of time when the Jews led a perfectly and totally spiritual life. That was their way of life. And they would be disqualified from leadership if Klal Yisrael would go in to Eretz Yisrael. They weren't concerned about their own perks. They were concerned rather about the future of the people. They feared that the people would go into Eretz Yisrael and begin planting and begin fighting. They would lose the ability to lead a spiritual life. And therefore they, despite Moshe's warning, they advocated to stay in the Midbar to continue to lead a spiritual life. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that Yehoshua ben Nun would be such a humble person, he might give in to them. And therefore he said, may God save you from the Eitzah, from the advice of the spies. But why the word Ka? If you take a look, you will see in source number 5. There are two olamas that God created. One with a hey, one with a yud. Olam haba is biyud, and olam hazeh is behey. So beka baram, behey baram, the combination. Yehoshua is being taught by Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm adding the name Ka to you. Ka is the combination of the yud of the next world to the hey of this world. It's the combination of the spiritual with the physical. This is the essence, Yehoshua, of your mission, to overcome the misgivings of the spies who feared to go into Eretz Yisrael for that reason. No, you can do it. Ultimately, you will lead them into Eretz Yisrael. Yehoshua, the perfect person to achieve this goal. Interestingly, we find that the original Kabbalah Satorah, which just commemorated yesterday and last week, Nasa V'Nishma, Vayis Yatzu B'Tachtis Ahar, the Jews were literally under the mountain, as Chazal say in source number 6. By Yisyatsu B'tachnes Ahar, Malamet Shekofalem Har Kigigis. Simple interpretation means that Hashem said, I'm holding the mountain over your head, accept the Torah or else. Boom. According to the Maharal Prague, it just had to be that way. As he puts it, the Torah is a mukhrach. It has to be. No choice. No alternative. But this, of course, belittles the sincerity of the acceptance of the people of Israel. What does Na'aseh v'Nishma mean? There's a long discussion, but not for now. But the Meshech Chochma of Meir Simcha of Tvinsk had his own fascinating interpretation. Don't take it literally that Hashem had the mountain hovering over their head and said, take the Torah or else, boom. Then that would be meaningless. What it meant was, in his words, V'zgalos nifla ad ki mamish batla b'chiros hamativi. Means God revealed himself to us at Har Sinai to such an amazing extent that we lost our ability to choose. V'yotla nishmosan b'asagos kvod Hashem. V'yu mukhrochim kemalochim below hevda. They were like angels. They had no choice. When Hashem is so clear and manifest, there's really no choice. That they knew, as Rashi comments, if you take the Torah, the world will go back to oblivion. This means they can claim that they accepted the Torah under duress. Not the literal duress of the Maharal Prague, but the spiritual duress of the extraordinary circumstances which surrounded them at Mamad Har Sinai, where God was right in front of them. They saw, it was clear, there was no choice but to accept the mitzvahs. That acceptance is not binding when we Jewish people are living a totally natural life. Mara tells us, the last line of source 6, Hodr kiblu abimeach ha-shverosh. Kimu v'kiblu ha-yehudim. We re-accepted the Torah. And what happened until then? Perhaps we could say, based on Meshech Chochma, that the time period between Mamad Har-Sinai and the story of Purim, Churban Bayis Rishon, we should say, there were constant miracles. The Beis HaMikdash itself, in its first manifestation, Bayis Rishon, there were so many miracles that happened each and every day. It was a miraculous world in which we lived. Yes, not quite the level of the revelation at Sinai, but sufficient that the acceptance of Sinai would nonetheless be binding in this period of miracles. But once the story of Purim came, Purim was a whole different situation. Take a look in source number 7. Esther minatora minayin, vanochi hastir aster ponai. It was an age of hester ponim, when God's presence can no longer be so easily and readily seen. And therefore, had we not re-accepted the Torah at that point in time, the initial acceptance would lapse. Because the initial acceptance took place when we were able to see Hashem directly, as Meir Simcha explains the Har Kigigis phenomena. Remarkably, the question becomes, how then were we punished in the time of the first temple? Modor Rabba Loraisa means that we cannot be punished for it, because we never really fully accepted it. So why were we punished? Amazing line in Meshech Chochma. V'lochein nenshu, next to the last line, V'bayis Rishon, al avodas kochavim, u'shvichus domim, v'arayos. The cardinal sins which were accepted before we ever got to Sinai. This we'll call this natural law. Everyone's required to know about this, and it's punished even in the absence of a formal acceptance. We could also add Shabbos, which was accepted at Mara voluntarily before we ever got to Har Sinai, as Rashi comments in Parshas B'Shalach. Therefore, what's happening here is a change. When we go in to Eretz Yisrael, we go a notch down. We used to live a totally spiritual existence, and now the existence becomes a physical existence. Much more difficult, much more challenging, That's what the spies did not want to go in. This is the challenge of Amalek. What is Amalek? What does Amalek stand for? Who knows where the word Molak is found? The three last letters of Amalek. Mem, Lamed, Kuf. Malika and the Korban, correct. You separate the head from the body. That's what Amalek does. Amalek says, you want to be holy, you can only be in the head. Your body has to be profane. Your body has to engage in all the physical pursuits with instant gratification to go back to his ancestor Esav. Halitaininam and ha'odam, ha'odam, azeki oyef anochi. Instant gratification, and Chazal say the soup was poured down like this. Couldn't wait a split second. You want to be holy? Your head can be holy. Your body can't. The rabbis taught us that Esav's head rolled into the Maros HaMachpelah, not his body. Body was the absolute opposite of holiness. So in source 8 we read, Vayavo Amalek, Vayelochem im Yisrael berefidim. Amalek came, something we read recently, we'll read again on Purim, and followed us berefidim. If you look at the very end of the first paragraph of source number 8, the lengthy paragraph, about 5 lines up, Acherim omrim, Ein refidim Ella, line ends with the word Ella, Rifyon Yodayim, the weakness of the hands, Rifidim, Rifyon Yodayim, Fisharafu Yisrael Yodayim Midivrei Torah, their hands were weakened from laws of Torah. I'm in source number 8, Mechilta, towards the end of the first paragraph. And 5 lines from the end of the first paragraph. I apologize for the sources weren't corrected to my request, so you're left with a line in the middle of many other lines. L'kach basoni aleim l'fish ein hasoni ba el al rifin yadayim min ha-Torah. When our hands weaken from Torah, that's when Amalek comes to attack us. So Rav Goldbach asked, what kind of expression is this? Rafu yadayim min ha-Torah. Their hands were weak from Torah. Your head is weak from Torah. We learn with our heads. It's true that sometimes in the Beis Medrash, we learn with our hands like this, you know, with the thumb. But that's not what it means. Why ruffle your day in that Torah? And he explained that that's exactly the point. At that point in time, the people of Israel felt, we cannot lead a physical life and at the same time be attached to Torah. At that moment in time, Amalek, the one who's Molek, who severs the head from the rest of the body, steps in and attacks. Because we were negligent. We weakened the connection between our hands and the Torah. That's exactly what Amalek and Esav fight against. As he explained, if Yaakov Avinu wished to stay in the Oholim, Ish Tanosha Oholim, Esav would have no qualm, no objection, no fight. But Rivka Yemenu insisted that Yaakov received not only the bracha of Yoshev Oholim, of the Birchas Avram, but also the Tala Shemayim and Mishmani Haaretz, that Yaakov be a man of the world as well. This Esav could not abide. Esav said, as Chazal put it, you Yaakov take Olam Haba, I'll take Olam Haza. And the whole point of being a good Jew is the opposite of that. Is Koyoshiacha Miatzat Ragam, the Yud with the Hay together. We live an Olam Haba life and Olam Hazeh together with our physical aspects which we consecrate and elevate and sublimate towards Avodas Hashem. That's why Amalek is our arch enemy. He cannot allow us to thrive as a people of this world which is completely devoted to otherworldly matters. That gives him a guilty conscience. You see, if we would stay in the Beis Medrash, he's okay. You, Yaakov, stay in the Beis Medrash, so of course you can be holy. But in this world, it's impossible to be holy. So I'm in this world, I'm not holy. Simple. If Yaakov is in this world and remains holy, Esav feels bad and looks bad. Indeed. That's why Esav cannot abide when we attempt to connect these two, this world and next world. And that's why, if you look in the source number, end of source number 8, Vayomer Moshe Yeshua b'chalon v'anoshim v'tzei lochem b'amalek. Go and fight against Amalek. Why did Moshe fight against Amalek? Why did he choose Yeshua? Furthermore, v'dei Moshe kevedim, his hands were heavy. Why were his hands heavy? What's happening over here? Ki yod al keis ko, milchom al Hashem b'amalek midor do. Again, the name ko. The answer is found based on the words of the Maharal Miprag. Source number 9 tells us about Moshe Rabbeinu's statement to Hashem back in Parashat Shmos. Yom Moshe Hashem, Lo ish devarim anochi. I'm not a man of words. Ki kvad peh uchvad loshon anochi. Moshe had trouble speaking. He asked the Maharal Miprag, how is it possible? Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest person who ever lived, has trouble speaking? Is it kvad peh? Perhaps he stutters or he mumbles. How is that possible? How do you understand it? Explain the Maharal, this is not to say that Moshe Rabbeinu was in any way inferior. To the contrary, he was superior. He was much higher than any other individual. And precisely because of his great spiritual height, he wasn't able to talk properly. How so? Look in source number 10. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim es Adam Ofer Men Adama Vayipach Bach Bav Nishmas Chayim. Man is a combination of the dust of the earth and the soul of life. How do you translate nefesh chaya, says Targum Unculus? Ruach mimalila, a speaking being. Speech is the combination of the spiritual and the physical. Thought is totally spiritual. Eating, for example, is totally physical. Speech, you use your physical limbs, you're using your lips and you're using your teeth and you're losing your lips, you're using your tongue and you're using your larynx. All this goes into this magic known as speech. It's a combination of physical organs and the thought process. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was ruchni biyoser, he was exceedingly spiritual. He's the only one in history who's ever told to separate from his wife. Exceedingly spiritual. Therefore, he had trouble talking. He was a kvad peh. He couldn't talk so well because his talking is the combination of the physical and the spiritual. For that very same reason, it was Yedei Moshe Kevedim. His hands were heavy. He was so spiritual, he couldn't lift up his hands so easily. He had to be picked up by Aaron and Hur. That's why he didn't fight Amalek. That would be you can't fight with somebody, how should we say it nicely, until you get into the ring. When you get into the ring, you can fight. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't in the ring. The ring is the people who are in this world, who have physical aspects together with the spirituality. They have to fight against Amalek, who wants to separate these two. Moshe Rabbeinu was also separate. He was a totally spiritual existence. He had to say, Yehoshua, Ko Yoshiachi, the Yud and the Hey, the combination of next world and this world, he should fight against Amalek. Fascinatingly, Moshe Rabbeinu, by refusing God's entreaties for a full 7 days, as Rashi says in Pasuk, in source number 9, Gam Itmol, Gam Ishilshom, Gam Eoz Dabercha Lavdecha, each one is 3 times 2 is 6, 7 days he refused to go. Says the Medrash, source number 11, some fascinating back and forth. Kol Shivas Yemea Miluim, for 7 days Moshe was a Kohen Gadol, didn't work, Shechina didn't come down. What's it all about, the 7 days? Says the Medrash, end of line 2. Hashem was trying to convince Moshe Rabbeinu to come. As it says, Gam Itmol, Gam Ishilshom, Gam Eoz, Shisha, the Shvi on the seventh day. What happens? Moshe says no. Shlach la biatishlach. Send Aaron. Says the Medrash, Chayecha, by your life, Shani tzoro lecha b'chnafecha. These 7 days that you refuse me will come back to haunt you. Amosai, Paralo, when did they come back to haunt him? Two interpretations. One, Kol zayin yemei odor, now starting tomorrow, odor. Moshe mevakesh tefila v'tachnunim sheikonis Eretz Yisrael. 7 days, was Chanan, 515 tefillos. Uvashvi Yom on the seventh day, Hashem told him, sorry, kilo sabar sayardein hazeh. What's the connection between the first seven and the next seven? Very simple. Moshe Rabbeinu, you disqualified yourself. You said you cannot go to take the Jews out of Egypt because you're a stutterer, kvat peh. What do you mean by that? That means you are unable to combine the physical and the spiritual. It's not for you. It's not for you. Who can do it? Aaron. So you disqualified yourself from being the leader to take him into Eretz Yisrael. Yoshua can do it. You can't. Because you disqualified yourself by saying, I'm unable to combine the physical and the spiritual. Had Moshe not refused, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have recreated him. Anochi Horeisicha. I would, Lashon Hirayon Chazal say, I would create a new version of Moshe Rabbeinu. Could have done it. But you refused, and you're out. That's number one. Fits in exactly what he said until now. Let's go further. On the seventh day, said, no. Lo shel chohi, ela shel aron achicha, yom hashmini. Again, what is the service in the Beis HaMikdash? It's taking physical items such as meat, wine, flour, and consecrating them. As it says, v'yachalta lefnei Hashem alokecha. Eat before Hashem. It's a foreign concept to the outside world. Either you're before Hashem or you eat. Can't eat before Hashem. We have this constantly in Sefer Dvarim. V'chaltam lefnei Hashem alokeichem. You eat before Hashem. You combine physical activities such as eating together with lefnei Hashem, before God in a spiritual manner. This is exactly what was achieved. But this is not Moshe Rabbeinu. For those who listen carefully, we read, not yesterday, the week before, the beginning of the Parsha of Yisro, that there was a feast. Who partook of the feast? Yisro and Aaron and Zikna Yisro. Where was Moshe? Rashi asks. Moshe was the waiter. So if you ever ask to be a waiter or a waitress, don't ever say it's beneath my dignity. Because Moshe Rabbeinu did it. But why wasn't he eating? Again, the same idea. Lecho lechem imchosein Moshe lefnei Elokim. Eating before Hashem. This wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu's strong suit. He wasn't the one to combine the eating before Hashem. That was for Aaron and for others, not Moshe Rabbeinu. Remarkable. Now we come to complete the circle in source number 12. So we read that a nation came. Who was this nation? It was Amalek. They disguised as Canaanim. And they heard that Aaron had died. And Kivo Yisrael Derech HaAsarim. Last line of page 4. What's Derech HaAsarim? Derech HaNegev Shehochu Bo HaMeraglim. Amalek sees that Aaron died and the Jews are passing the same road they did when the Meraglim sinned. What a perfect time and place to attack. Aaron is the one who symbolized the bringing together of the physical and the spiritual in the Karbanos and Yerushalayim Beis HaMikdash. He died. He's out. The Meraglim, that path was the path of those, again, who felt it's impossible to combine the physical and the spiritual. That's why they wished to stay in the desert, not to go into Eretz Yisrael. That's the time for Amalek to attack, to be a Molech, to separate between the physical and the spiritual, at that time and in that place. And how do we overcome Amalek? How? Well, we're going to read Shabbos a week from now, Erev Purim. Timche Zecher Amalek, source 13. Well, what comes right after that? That's the end of Parshas Ki Tse. How do we begin Parshas Ki Savo? The first four psukim we're all talking about. Bikurim. Bikurim. What are Bikurim called? Bikurim are called, if you look in source number, end of number 13, the last line, Trumas Yetchem Elu HaBikurim Lokach HaKohen Atena Mi Yodecha. That's exactly the way to overcome Amalek. You lift up your hands. Bikur means you go and you work so hard to plant, and your first fruit, the very first fruit, Adam Yodor Sof Sadeh, he put in such hard work, and he sees the first fruit, Hareza Bikurim, he consecrates the first fruit to Hashem. This is a combination of a physical existence with a spiritual one. This is the whole essence of triumph over Amalek. Oh, we now begin to understand. Why? Because we fell prey to this separation. The Meraglim sinned by wishing to stay in the desert where they'd be only living a spiritual life because they felt they could not connect the physical to the spiritual. And this led to terrible consequences. Memata b'simcha, we reduce joy. Kach so, juxtapose, the opposite. Mishenichnas Adar, we vanquished Amalek. The Jews were victorious over Amalek in the story of the Megillah. That's the time to be marbe b'simcha. But we can achieve the combination of the physical and the spiritual. This is the essence of our victory over Amalek. Chazal tell us that when Mordechai was so worried the Jews would be destroyed, he went to the young Talmidim. They were learning about Kmita Samincha. It was the second day Pesach. What does that mean? Flour, and you take your hand and you make a certain measure of it and wipe it, rub it away. There was no Beis HaMikdash then, but they were thinking about it because they understood you take flour and you consecrate it. This is how we overcome Amalek. Haman saw he couldn't overcome us because we were now combining the physical and the spiritual, and this is how we increase the joy of Adar. But let us focus in the last part of the shiur on the joy of Purim itself. We begin, source 14, something remarkable. There's a dispute about something which we do not have this year. It's called Purim Katan, in a leap year. We had it last year. So there is a dispute, should you eat and drink or not? So the Ramah writes, you know, Yarbek tzas mesudak leotzis day of achmirim. This is a chumrah which we all like, right? To eat and to drink. This is a good chumrah. And he ends the famous ending of this of Orach Chaim, v'tov leiv mishteh tamid. A source in Mishle, 15. Kol yomei ani roim v'tov leiv mishteh tamid. You probably are aware the very first words of the Ramah in Orach Chaim, Ashivisi Hashem l'negdi tamid. The Mefarshim explained the two tamidim. Starts with Tamid and ends with Tamid. Tamid is Hashem has always been in front of you, and the Tov Lev is Mishta. Tamid is always in the state of Mishta. What does Mishta mean? What does it mean to shoseh? To drink, right? What does that mean? I'm going to read you from the Vilna Gaon's interpretation on this pasuk in Mishle. This should have been on the source sheet, but sorry. I read it to you from here. As Chazal say, Ezehu Asher v'chulei. Who can finish a sentence? Ezehu Asher, please. Sameach b'chalko, correct. What's an ani? Humi shenavsha rechava. He has big eyes. She'eno mistape v'chol ha'shalom. Whatever he has is never enough. V'chol chalale di'alma lo yaspikenu b'data. Whatever he has, if you're a millionaire, won't be enough. V'lachain, kol yemei ani roim. Every day is bad. Why is every day bad? He invested in the stock market. The stock market went up. He made $1 million. Why is it bad? You know why? Could have made two. Ki eino bevshori sheyasi kochevto v'yemolei dato. Ein odom meis v'chati tavoso v'yodom. He made $1 million. Could have made $2 million. I only wouldn't have sold that thing there last year. I would have made $2 million, not $1 million. He'll never be happy. He can make $1 million in one day. That day is also a bad day. In his mind, it could have been better. Nebuch, Rachmanis, kol yemei ani roim. By definition, he's poor. No matter how rich he is, he's poor. Because he always wants more. What's the contrast? V'tov leiv mishteh tamid. Explains the Vilna Gaon. Mi shemaspik b'mashiyesho, libo sameach tamid. Eizu washer sameach b'chalkom. He's always happy. But he had a bad day. Stocks went down, or he has no stocks, whatever it may be. Things are bad. He's poor. How can he be happy? Listen to what it says. And what does it mean, Mishta Tamim? Ha'ish asha Mishta Bebeso Shalibo Sameach Be'eshu Shosu Yayin. I'm speaking now from personal, I can't identify. Thank God I never got drunk. But someone apparently who gets a little tipsy and drunk, he's the top of the world. Living in a world of make-believe. Don't ever do it. But apparently this is what exists in the outside world for those who do it. The king will walk in, he's oblivious, he's in his old world. How high can you be on this high? How long can you be on this high? Not too long. Achli achar hafigo yeno, once the wine leaves him, eno bisimchas al-shayatchila. That's it, he's probably in a depression, a hangover, it's terrible. That's someone who's drinking in this world, regular drink. But a tov lev, someone who's tov lev with somech b'chalko, who tomin somech ke simchas ha-shos v'beis ha-mishnah. The tov lev mishnah tomin. He's always just as happy as that drunk is when he's drunk. Can't be happier than you're drunk too long, because it's going to take you over, you're going to fall apart. Someone who's tov lev can always be as happy as the person who's drinking feels at the time that he's intoxicated. But that can only be a short time. If you're tov lev, it can be forever. The exact opposite. Kol yamei ani ro'im, no matter how good things are, it's terrible, because he's missing more. Someone who's sameach b'chalko, every single day, no matter what happens, he's always happy. He's always as happy as that fellow who's drinking when he's drinking. This way, with no drugs and no alcohol, he's happy all the time. What is the magic potion? The magic potion is tov lev. He's a good heart. He's sameach b'chalko. Someone that's more than him, he's very happy for that fellow. This is the essence of the simcha of Purim Katan, the tov lev mishnah tamin, and even more so, of course, Purim Gadol, the regular Purim, which we're going to celebrate in Emet Hashem in 2 weeks from today. And therefore, in conclusion, I'd like to show you source number 16. This is the Rambam. Mutav la'adam la'harbos v'matonos avyonim mi'laharbos v'sudaso uv'shloach monos areyef. We all know the minimum. There's a minimum for matonos avyonim, gifts for the poor. There's a minimum of shloach monos, sending food to your friend. It's a minimum. What if you have enough money to exceed the minimum? Where should you put your money? Matanos levyonim, gifts for the needy. Why? Rambam explains why. She'ein sham simcha gedola mufuara. There is no greater or more splendid joy. Ela l'sameach levaniim v'yisomim v'amonos v'gerim. But to gladden the heart of the poor, the orphan, the widows, and the strangers. Shemesameach lev ha'mlolam ha'elu, one who gladdens the heart of these unfortunates, doma l'shchina. Wow. He is like Hashem. Shenemar, as it says, lahachios, describing Hashem, lahachios ruach shefolim, to revive the spirit of the lowly, ulahachios lev nitkoyim, and to revive the heart of the crushed. What an amazing Rambam. What an incredible, incredible Rambam. If a person has a choice of increasing shalach manas and matanas evyonim, you increase matanas evyonim, not shalach manas, not sudas purim. Why? Didn't we say before that the whole essence of Purim, of the victory over Amalek, is by combining the physical and the spiritual? Hence, Purim is a yom of mishnah v'simcha, of eating and drinking. Nonetheless, it's a higher level. And let me explain why there's a higher level. Why is it a higher level? You see, the human body is physical and by definition limited. You may have seen, you pass by in the streets, there's an ad in a restaurant, all you can eat for X amount of dollars. You take away the whole store. They know very well. Can't eat that much. After a while, it just comes up. Can't drink that much. It just comes up. They can afford to give you all you can eat for X dollars, and they won't go broke. Because the body is limited. But look at source 70. Hanefesh lo timole. The soul can never be satiated. Never, never. And if this is the pshat in another pasuk in Koheles. Oev kesef lo yisba kesef. One who loves money will never be happy with the money, will never be satiated. We saw before in the Vilna Gaon. But Chazal say, Ohev Torah, Eina Soveyaba. You love Torah and mitzvahs, you never have enough. Why did Chazal feel it necessary to reinterpret the verse when the simple interpretation is so manifestly true? The answer is that Ohev Kesev L'Yitzva Kesev makes no sense. You can only wear one shirt. Now how much money can you accumulate already? What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? A million, a billion. What are you going to do with it? Why do you love more and more and more money? You can't use it for anything. The answer is, it's a perversion. Kadosh Baruch Hu created this idea of something being insatiable, an unquenchable thirst in every human being for the purpose of Torah and mitzvahs. Oh, if Torah ain't a saveba, you want more Torah, more mitzvahs. We corrupted it, unfortunately, to Oev Kesev in the literal sense. Hence the comparison. Now you understand very well what the Rambam is saying. When we are marbe besudah and shalachmanus, there's a certain limit, there's a cap. How much you can eat on Purim? There's a limit. After that, you can't eat anymore, can't drink anymore. But that's the simcha of the body. Yes, it's important. V'yachalt lefnei Hashem, it's important. But there's even a greater simcha. She'ein sham simcha gedola. Gedola is quantitative. As I said before, eating and drinking has a quantitative limit. The stomach is limited. But there's no quantitative limit to spiritual joy. Just keep giving and giving and giving as much as you can, helping and helping and helping. You always feel good about yourself. Not only that, but it's also mifu'ara. It's a splendid joy. I have to tell you, eating and drinking, if it's a mitzvah, on Shabbos, a Yom Tov, a Purim, not so splendid. It's sort of a little bit animalistic. We have to try our best to elevate it and sublimate it. But splendid it's not. No, it's not. Whereas helping another individual who's down and out, that's mifuara. And now we understand very well why it's doma l'shechina. Chazal have taught us that the neshama is what we call a chelek elokam imal. It's a portion of the heavenly God. A very small portion. Infinitesimal portion. But when we were growing up, they taught us that the smallest fraction of infinity is still infinity. That's the old math. Is it still true in the new math? The old math of my time was true. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was infinite. If our neshama is a chelek elokam imal, that means it's also infinite. That's pshat ha-nefesh lo simole, because it just can keep filling itself with more and more and more and more simcha, as it involves itself in more and more and more and more Torah mitzvahs. This is the way to experience more quantitative joy and the greater qualitative joy, the simcha gedola umufuara, and to be doma l'shechina if you like HaKadosh Baruch. We're now beginning the month of Adar. Today is Rosh Chodesh, tonight's already Adar. Adar is a month of simcha. The way for us to celebrate this month is to learn the lessons that we've spoken about and to actualize them. The first lesson is that everything we do in life should be holy. Anshei Kodesh. Our holiness should not be restricted to the time that we spend in a shul, hearing a shir, davening. That's all important, not belittling it. That's only part of life. Part of life. Life extends to the home, to the office, to the street, wherever we go. We have to lead a holy life, a life of Anshei Kodesh, a life of taking mundane worldly activities that others engage in. Some even, as the rabbis put it, that animals engage in. But for us, we elevate it and sublimate it and consecrate it instead of profaning it and being out of control. Now, Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik said that in order to redeem ourselves, that was his word, the way you redeem any physical pleasure is by exercising self-restraint. I will do this, I will not do that. Then even when you do what you do, it takes on a totally spiritual character. If a person cannot control himself, just out of control in any area of physical pleasure, we see so much of it in today's world, that means that it's unredeemed. It's animalistic. So as I talk about the Baal Shem Tov, one of the person that they used to call in Europe a magushim, a very earthly, physical kind of a person. And he was, I guess, digging into his chont and the Baal Shem Tov said, you know, this guy, I see horns on his face. Baal Shem Tov had this X-ray vision plus. He saw that this individual was eating like an animal. Control yourself, mister. Relax. Chont is good. So we should have good chont, but like a mensch, not like an animal. This is very, very important. All areas of physical life have to be redeemed and elevated and sublimated and consecrated. This is what Amalek fights against. Amalek is malak, to separate the head from the rest of the body. Disconnect. We, following Rivka Imenu, believe that Yaakov and all of his descendants, including us, have to combine the Tala Shamayim and the Shmanei Haaretz, the earthly blessings, together with the Birchas Avraham, the eternal spiritual blessings. Combining them ultimately leads to tremendous joy. Because then we recognize that whatever we're doing, everything we do in life, is in the service of Hashem. It's exactly the opposite of what happened in Chodesh Av. In Chodesh Av, the spies felt, we cannot go into Eretz Yisrael, we cannot combine them, we have to stay here in the Midbar, where we have no problems with earning a living, we have no problems fighting battles. But that wasn't Hashem's plan. That's why their decision may have come from a good place. It was terribly sinful and caused destruction of everything, including the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, where we were able to combine the physical and the spiritual to the ultimate sense of korbanos, even achilas korbanos, v'yachalta lefnei Hashem. Mikdash is gone. Amalek attacked when Aaron died, because Aaron combined the two in service to Kohen Gadol, whereas Moshe was purely spiritual. He sent Yehoshua, Koyoshiyako, the Yud and the Hey of Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh, to fight against Amalek. This disconnect was a sin of the month of Av, which led to terrible grief. Mamata b'simcha, we limit our joy. And Adar is the opposite. Adar is when we combine the two and we vanquish Amalek. And then, once we understand that all of our physical activities and acquisitions are only meant to be consecrated, we're never going to be jealous of somebody else. We'll be tov lev mishta tamid, we sameach b'chelko. You can be as happy all day long, no matter what happens, as this drunk individual is in those few hours that he's on a high. And if not, it's kol yomei ani ro'im. Every day is a bad day. No matter how much money you make, it's bad because you could have had more. You'll never be happy. Finally, the ultimate simcha, Purim proper. When yes, we involve ourselves in Mishnah v'simcha, absolutely. But the greatest, both quantitative and qualitative joy, is Matanos Avyonim. And Matanos Avyonim doesn't just mean you give some money at the door, you write a check. It's something which is existential. As we read yesterday in Shul, in Kesef Talves Amis Ani Imach, says Rashi, look at yourself as if you're an Ani. Don't lord over anybody else. There, but for the grace of God, go I. The wheel of fortune can turn. Someone walks and asks you for a donation. Don't be cross and upset. Could have been you. This idea of always trying to help other people is, of course, a burden, no question about it. You take our time from something which is more pleasurable, more instant gratification. But at the end of the day, and this is proven time and time and time again, a person, number one, is able to control physical pleasures, to restrict them according to the halacha. And let's not forget, not only are we restricting ourselves by staying away from absolutely prohibited activity, but as the Ramban writes in Kedoshim, Kedoshim to you should not be a novel b'shus HaTorah, where a person can engage in gluttony and sexual activity, which may be not an absolute prohibition, but it's completely inappropriate. If he does that, he's in violation of Kedoshim to you, you're not holy. we who understand the physical parts of the world are certainly necessary, we can sublimate them and elevate them. That will make us happy. And even more so, when we help others who are in need. And after it's done, maybe you had to interrupt our dinner to give someone at the door. Maybe we had to go out somewhere to help somebody. Whatever it may be, when we finish and we come back, we'll feel very happy about it. And so I conclude by wishing that everybody here should have a tremendous fulfillment of Mishanis Nichnas Adar Marvin B'Simcha, culminating the Simcha of Purim itself. Thank you.